God and power, religion and politics. That's, I think, the core of the Book of Shmuel. What is our relationship with God not supposed to look like? And what is our relationship with God supposed to look like? Shmuel has an ideology, and his ideology is an anti-monarchy ideology. Martin Buber, the great philosopher and actually Bible interpreter, he understands his ideology as, he calls it, religious anarchism, meaning there is no legitimacy for any human being to control the life of any other human being because we are all equal in the eyes of God. This is how I think we should understand Samuel's anti-king, anti-kingdom, anti-monarchy ideology and theology. In any kingdom, there can be only one king. And in a kingdom, there's one king, and if a different person declares himself king, that's rebellion. Imagine the world as a kingdom. God is the king. If that's how you see the world, and that's how Shmuel saw the world. The world is a kingdom and God is the king. Or maybe Israel is the kingdom and God is the king. But if that's the case, within Israel or within Yehuda, within this land where God is king, if a person declares himself king, he's rebelling against God. That's how Shmuel sees it. Creating a monarchy is rebelling against God. God is king, therefore no human being can be king. And then God appoints Shmuel to appoint the king and to be the founding father of the monarchy. The founder of the monarchy is the person that has an ideology that's anti-monarchy. Now that gap between someone's ideology and someone's policy and his mission, that's where things get interesting. Imagine God wanted evacuation of all the communities in Yehuda Vishomron and the formation of a Palestinian state, a two-state solution. And he appoints Bezalel Smotrich from the far right to fulfill that mission. Wouldn't that be interesting? That gap between his ideology and the policy and his mission. Imagine God would have wanted to evacuate, to build communities all over Yehuda Vishomron. He would appoint Zehava Gal'on from the far left to fulfill that mission. That would have created a gap between your ideology and your policy and your mission. When that gap happens, things get interesting. That's exactly the story of Shmuel. He has a theology that's anti-kingdom, anti-monarchy, and he's the person that has to build the kingdom, that has to found the monarchy. That's the gap, that's the tension within Shmuel's biography. By the way, this is so biblical. When God needs to choose, or the Tanakh needs to choose, the person that will create the monarchy, to choose the guy that's against monarchy. We see this with Yonah, we see this with Jeremiah, we see this throughout the Bible. But if I dive deeper into the tension of Shmuel, it gets even more interesting, and here's why. Shmuel is anti-monarchy, he's the founder of the monarchy, but he doesn't like monarchy. He doesn't like the idea of concentrating power in one place with one person, in the hands of one person. But it turns out he really likes Shaul, which takes us to a new tension. Shmuel that hates kingdom likes the king, likes the person, likes Shaul. This is where I want to go a little bit deeper into. How do we know that Shmuel really likes Shaul? I want to open four windows into the psyche of Shmuel to see how he feels towards Shaul. Now, it's very complicated. It's even more complicated when presenting it. But there's four windows into the mind of Shmuel. And one is, how does Shmuel feel when he sees Shaul? Well, he needs to appoint him, pour oil on his head, make him king. So how does he react? And he reacts with a lot of enthusiasm. And how do I know that he reacts with a lot of enthusiasm and excitement? Because I want to compare the way Shmuel reacts to Shaul and the way Shmuel reacts to David. Because don't forget, Shmuel poured oil on the heads, not of one, but of two kings. He appointed two kings, Shaul and David. So we can easily compare how he behaved towards Shaul and then how he behaved towards David. So when we learned this, that when he sees Shaul, he says to him, "Lemi kol chemdat Yisrael alecha olevet avicha." You are the treasure of Israel. Or maybe chemda means you are what Israel is desiring. It says, lo tachmod, we're not allowed to desire. And he says, lemi kol chemdat Yisrael, all of Israel are desiring you and your... And he was just anonymous. He was searching for his donkeys. And he bumps in, remember Michael Jordan, the celebrity. He's saying, I've been searching for you. I've been waiting for you all day. Maybe even, that's how it seems like, my whole life. So, and then he spends time with him. He talks with him. He pours oil on his head and he kisses him. And he sends him to his ways. That's how he responds to Shaul. How do you respond to David when he goes to Ishai's family? I think you say Jesse in English, right? He goes to Jesse's family in Bethlehem to appoint David. So this is what it says. This is the only words he says. Vayikach Shmuel et keren ha-shemen vayimshoch oto bekerev echav. He pours oil in his head. What does he say to him? Nothing. Silence. Not one word. So he's silent with David and he's ecstatic with Shaul. Second window is if we try to learn how he behaved towards, how he responds to him when he hired him. Now, how does he respond when he fired him? Well, Shaul sinned. He was sent to kill the entire tribe of Amalek. He didn't do it, even though that's what God wanted him to do. He disobeyed God's orders. God told Shmuel, Shmuel told Shaul. Shaul disobeyed the order. He didn't complete the job. So Shmuel has to fire him. But this is how we respond. God tells him to fire him. God tells him to tell Shaul that he can't be king anymore. But this is how Shmuel responds, Shmuel, to the news that Shaul won't be king anymore. It says, Vayichar leShmuel vayizak el Adonai kol halayla. The entire night, he's screaming and shouting and yelling to God. That's how he responds. He refuses to accept the fact that Shaul is not going to be king anymore. Oh, and by the way, later on, when Shmuel will have to choose an alternative king, and he's sent to David. So this is how he sends to Bethlehem to pour oil on the head of David. So this is how Shmuel sends him. He says to him, "Vayomer Adonai el Shmuel." Ad matay ata mitabel el Shaul. God says to Shmuel, stop mourning. Stop, you're in grief. Stop mourning about Shaul. Move on and please go appoint his alternative. And finally, fourth window. Remember how Shaul is tall, goofy, shy, embarrassed, and tall? Remember that? Well, it's a great moment. When Shmuel goes to Ishai's family and he has eight children and he only sees the seven because the eighth is David, he's not there. He's a shepherd. It's also interesting. And we'll go into it. It's also interesting. So a lot of people discuss it. Like, why wasn't he there? Why is he absent? We're not going to go into that question. So he sees the sons of Ishai and he sees Eliav. Shmuel sees Eliav and he's sure it's him. It's Eliav. He says, Ach neged Adonai Meshicho. He's sure he's supposed to pour oil on the head of Eliav. To appoint Eliav, the older brother of David, to be the new king of Israel. But God says to Shmuel, you got it wrong. You're not seeing straight. But this is how God says to him why he got it wrong. Because God knows what's the mistake that he made. And this is what God says to him. Vayomer Adonai el Shmuel, Al tabet el mar'ehu. Don't judge a book by its cover. Don't measure him by the way it looks. And then he says, Al tabet el mar'ehu ve'el gova komato. Ignore the fact that he is tall. Ignore his height. It's not him. Ki me'astihu. What God is saying to him is, I know why you're excited about Eliav. he reminds you of someone. He reminds you of the other tall guy. And he says, Me'astihu, I'm not interested in him. And it seems like I'm not interested in, not Eliav, I'm not interested in Shaul, that Eliav remind. When someone is obsessed with someone else, and we've all been obsessed in some period of our lives, so you're really in love, or you're really obsessed, and you can't stop thinking about someone, you see that someone all over the place. Everyone somehow reminds you of that someone. That's Shmuel's mindset. He sees Eliav, reminds him of Shaul, it says he's him. And then when God says, Al tabet el mareu velukova komoto, he's saying, move on. Shaul is gone. We have to move now to the next episode of Jewish history. We have to appoint David. Move on. You're obsessed with Shaul. Oh, and finally, what is Shaul's name? His name is Shaul. What is Shmuel's name? Well, Hannah calls him Shmuel because she asked him from God. Ki me'ashem she'altiv. To ask in Hebrew means lish'ol. And also, Hebrew is a powerful language, and every word has a lot of meanings. It doesn't only mean to ask, it also means lash'il, to lend. And she says, I'm lending my son to God. And then she says, Shaul hu la'adonai. He's lent to God, Shaul. So his name is Ki me'ashem she'altiv, Shaul hu la'adonai. That's his name. That's why he is Shaul. He is lent to God. So she called him Shmuel. Now, I don't get it. She calls him Shmuel because he is Shaul. I don't get it. But what I do get is that the meaning of the name of Shmuel is Shaul. And what is Shaul's name? It's Shaul. So the meaning of the name of Shmuel is Shaul. This is another powerful biblical hint that there is a very strong invisible bond between these two people, Shmuel and Shaul. They have their name in common. We saw that when he hires him, he's excited. When he hires David, he's silent. When he fires him, he mourns. And when he has to look for a replacement, he's looking for Shaul all over again. I think that was enough to establish the fact that Shmuel loves Shaul. He's deeply connected to Shaul, which brings us back to what seems like our second tension. It's not only that the founder of the monarchy is against monarchy, it's a person who hates the idea of kingdom loves the king. But if I want to think about this one more time, I don't think there's a real tension here. Our second tension is a false tension. Why does he love Shaul? Shaul is shy, embarrassed. In the divine lottery, like we learned the last session, when he's chosen, he's not even there. He's hiding in the storage rooms. His assistant bosses him around. He doesn't give orders. He's insecure. He's embarrassed. He's not king material. That's why Shmuel likes him. Shmuel thinks the best, we don't have a king, but if we need a king, this is how it will look like. The best king is the anti-king, the opposite of a king. The king that won't carry the arrogance of the pagan kings of Mesopotamia or the pharaohs of Egypt. Not the authoritative king. Not the king that will want people obey to them. The kind of person that with his humility, he'll continue obeying God. You see, this is not a tension. It's not that although he's against kingdom, he likes the king. It's because he's against the idea of kingdom. He likes this king. And Shmuel believes that his insecurity will lead to humility, will lead to the idea that God will de facto stay king because the king will obey the real king, God. There won't be a replacement of God as king. And what will guarantee that this king won't replace God as king is his character, his humility, his insecurity. He won't have the hubris of pharaohs believing he is the Lord. He will know that he has a Lord, he has a God. Does this work out? This is the theory. This is, I think, how Shmuel understands reality. But is this how reality is going to look like? Well, this takes us to the sin of Shaul. God commands Shmuel to command Shaul to finish the job that began when the Israelites left Egypt. When they left Egypt in Sinai, in a place called Rephidim, the Amalekim came and attacked them. In a weak point in their history, when they're just escaping Egypt and they were just slaves, and they don't only attack them in the weakest point in their history, they're also attacking the weakest among them. The women and children of evil behind. That's a common reading. And then Moshe says, never forget what they did to you. And when you have the opportunity, you finish the job and you finish off Amalek. God tells Shmuel to tell Shaul, this is the moment. We're closing the cycle. That's a metaphor in Hebrew. I don't know if it works in English. Nisgor et ha-magal. We are finishing what began in Yetziat Mitzrayim. Shaul takes his troops to destroy Amalek. He doesn't. He keeps the king of Amalek alive. He takes all the spoils of war in order to enjoy them and to give them out to his soldiers. And then Shmuel asks him, what did you do? And Shaul said, I did exactly what God told me. So he asks, so what are all these goats? What are all the spoils of war? You didn't destroy everything. And he said, oh, no, I took this because I'm from. Because I want to worship God. I'm going to take this and I'm going to sacrifice all this to God. And then famously Shmuel says to him, you got it wrong. God doesn't want sacrifice, he wants obedience. God doesn't want lambs. He wants you to surrender to him. He wants you. He wants you to accept his authority. He wants obedience, not sacrifice. Once, and then there's a moment where Shmuel explains to Shaul how Shmuel interprets Shaul's sin. The fact that he was disobedient. The fact that he didn't destroy all, that he took the spoils of war and didn't destroy it like he was commanded to do. And he says to him the following. He says to him, Vayomer Shmuel, Halo, im katon ata be'einecha, Rosh Shivtei Yisrael ata. I'll read this again. Im katon ata be'einecha, Rosh Shivtei Yisrael ata. V'im ha'shechacha Adonai le'melech. Al Israel. He says, "Im katonat beinecha, you are small in your own eyes, but you are the leader of Israel." He's saying there's a tremendous gap between the way you experience yourself and your position in society. In your own eyes, you're small. I know you're insecure, you don't believe in yourself. You always feel small. But politically, you're big. What happens when there's such a gap between your psychology and your place in social hierarchy? Psychologically, he feels like he's in the bottom of the food chain. Politically, he's on the top of the food chain. And Shmuel says, "Im katon ata beinecha, Rosh Shivtei Yisrael ata." You think you're the bottom, but really you're in the top. Now that gap, somehow in the eyes of Shmuel, explains Shaul's sin. How does it explain Shaul's sin? A moment later, Shaul comes out and admits he sinned and explains Shmuel's analysis that the source of his sin is the gap between his self-esteem and his political status. His self-esteem is low, his political status is high. He's the king. That gap explains his sin. And this is how Shaul says it in his words. He says to him, Shaul el Shmuel, Chatati, ki avarti et pi Adonai ve'et varecha. I have sinned. Shaul's a mensch. At the end, he takes responsibility and he admits, full-heartedly, he admits he has sinned. Is full-heartedly a word? Wholeheartedly. He admits that he sinned. But how did he explain his sin? Avarti et pi Adonai, I disobeyed God's words. Ve'et dvarecha, your words. That's a hierarchy. God tells Shmuel, Shmuel tells Shaul, and Shaul understands that Shmuel is also offended. I violated God's words and your words. And how does he explain it? Ki yareti et ha'am va'eishma bekolam, ki yareti et ha'am. I fear the people, my soldiers, my troops, I'm afraid of them. And therefore, I listened to them. I obeyed them. Why is he afraid of the... So at that moment, he disobeyed God's will because he obeyed the will of his troops, of his soldiers. Now, to understand why he was so afraid of his soldiers, we have to understand how wars used to... how they used to evolve. It's against... I was a soldier in the Israeli military for many years, also in Miluim, in reserves, and according to our code of ethics, you never touch the spoils of war. It's not yours. You fight for your country, but you don't get to enjoy, like, if after you conquer a city or a town or a village, you're not allowed to touch anything that's there. It's not yours. That's our military, the IDF, Tzahal's code of ethics. But in the ancient world, they didn't have that code of ethics. It was obvious to everyone, including they had a different code of ethics in the Bible, that when you go to the battlefield and you defeat your enemy, what they have is yours. The spoils of war are yours. And not only that they're yours, that's the motivation of the soldiers. There's a trade-off. They're willing to work hard, risk their lives, but the reward is the spoils of war. Shaul didn't have it within him to tell his soldiers, this war is different. You will have to sacrifice your life or risk your life like other battles, but you won't enjoy the spoils of war because it's Amalek, as opposed to other battles. It's a different kind of a battle. He couldn't say that to them. He said, the spoils are yours. Take them. Why did he say that to them? Because he was afraid of them. Because Shaul does not lead his people. Shaul tries to please his people, to satisfy his people. Now, why is he a pleaser and not a leader? Why is he afraid of the people? By the way, in a regular military, soldiers are afraid of their commander. In Shaul's military, the commander is afraid of his soldiers. And instead of leading them, he pleases them. And that leads him to disobey God's commandments. Why is he pleasing them? Why is he terrified of his own people? We know why. He's an insecure guy. He doesn't believe that he has the charisma, the power to lead them. He doesn't believe that they'll follow him if he gives an unpopular command like the spoils of war this time are not yours. Here's my point. He obeyed the people and disobeyed God. You know why? Because he's insecure. My point is, Shmuel thought that his insecurity will guarantee his obedience to God. What really happened, his insecurity is the reason why he disobeyed God and obeyed the people, pleased the people, because he was afraid of the people. So Shmuel didn't want a fearless leader filled with sense of a high self-esteem. He wanted a fearful leader with low self-esteem. Thought that will guarantee spiritual success. That will guarantee they will obey God. My point is, because of all the reasons why Shaul loved Shmuel, for those reasons, he had to fire Shmuel. His insecurity turned against him. What was supposed to guarantee spiritual success turned into spiritual failure. Here's the thing about insecurity. We think insecurity leads to humility. Sometimes insecurity could turn upside down and create people that have an obsession with popularity. Which takes me to my next point. Because the sin of Shaul doesn't end when he did not destroy the city of the tribe of Amalek. That same sin, or the genes of that sin, the DNA of that sin, is played out through the next stages of his career. In the next stage, one of the next stages, Shaul will hear a song after David will bring down Goliath. The women of Israel will come out, we spoke about this, and sing, Hika Shaul Ba'alafav, V'David Bir Vevotav. In other words, Shaul took down one interpretation. Thousands, David, tens of thousands. Anyway, we interpret it, the way Shaul hears it, David is more popular than I am. Why is he more popular than I am? I'm supposed to be number one. I'm the king. I'm supposed to be the most loved in Israel, not number two. And with the tremendous obsession, he chases David all over ancient Israel. And at one moment, at a fatal moment, David hides in Nov, and the priests of Nov give him a sword, give him bread, sacred bread, by the way, it's a different issue. And he moves on to different hiding places, hiding from Shaul. Shaul chases him all over Israel. And when he hears that the people of Nov gave him momentarily, temporary refuge, he slaughters them all. Why does he slaughter them? This is a big question. It seems it's like some people even see this as an enigma. How is it that he did not slaughter the tribe of Amalek, but he did slaughter all the priests of Nov, besides Aviatar that escaped? We spoke about him. How could we explain this peculiar behavior of Shaul? The Talmud asks this question. How can he be so cruel to the compassionate priests of Nov and so compassionate to the cruel people of Amalek? His behavior doesn't make any sense. It's like it's two Shauls. He's compassionate towards cruel people. He is cruel towards compassionate people. How can we explain this? My argument is there is no tension here. There's no paradox here. It's not two Shauls. Why does he not kill the people of Amalek? Because he wants to be popular. Why does he kill all the priests of Nov? Because he's chasing David and he wants to kill David because he's a threat to his popularity. He kills, meaning, for all the reasons he doesn't kill Amalek, he does kill the priests of Nov because he's obsessed with popularity. It's not two stories, it's one story, one sin. The sin of his need to be loved, his need to be accepted. And that is a tendency of radically insecure people. If the sense of self-worth doesn't come from within, so you need people, so you keep seeking external validation for your self-worth. Shmuel got it wrong. Shmuel thought that his low self-esteem will create a very humble king. It's actually his low self-esteem is creating a cruel king, a king that is an obsession for popularity, will do everything, including not killing Amalek and including killing all the priests of Nov. He got it wrong because what he got wrong is that he thinks insecurity leads to humility. No, when you're actually, maybe humility is not a result of insecurity, it's a result of a strong sense of security. When people have faith in themselves, they have less emotional need in everyone else to have faith in them. But when you have no self-value, all your value is external, you become obsessed with popularity. Brings me back to my point of this session. Why did Shmuel have to fire Shaul? For the same reason he fell in love with him when he hired him. He loved him because of his lack of security. He had to fire him because the fact that he had no sense of security. Shaul's collapse in his sense of self-worth, which led to an obsession to chase David and to kill the person that's threatening his popularity, and as a result, his power. This has a lot to do with his relationship with Shmuel. There's more layers here. Because you see, before I mainly discussed what Shmuel felt towards Shaul. What I didn't discuss is what Shaul felt towards Shmuel. Now, Shaul was emotionally dependent on Shmuel. I want to offer two windows into this tendency of Shaul to be emotionally dependent on Shmuel. One is when Shmuel fires Shaul after the moment, after his sin in Amalek. So Shaul asks Shmuel, please come with me back to the people. I need you with me. And it's a very touching moment. And he says to him, I need you with me. He says, V'ata sana et chatati, v'shuv imi v'ishtachave l'Adonai. V'yom Shmuel l'Shaul, lo shuv imcha. Ki ma'asta et dvar Adonai. I'm not going, you want to be seen with me publicly. You want me to be next to you when you return to the people. I'm not with you. I'm not going. I'm not going to stand by you. And as a result, v'yisov Shmuel alechet, Shmuel turns his back and he's going to leave him. And in a very powerful image, it says, "Vayechezak baknaf meilo vayikara." Shaul clings to his meil, to his robe. He clings to his robe. Please stay, please stay. And the robe is torn. Think about that image: Shaul clinging, holding tight to the cloak, to the robe of Shmuel. It's an image of a child holding on to his mom or to his dad. Shmuel is a father figure for Shaul. And Shaul is emotionally dependent on Shmuel. And this emotional dependency that we see when he tries to hold on to his robe, we see an even more powerful moment towards the end of his career. Towards the end of his career, there's going to be a battle between the Israelites and the Philistines in the Gilboa, up north, overlooking Emek Beit She'an, the valley of Beit She'an. And that night, before the battle, Shaul has a panic attack. He's terrified, and he doesn't know what to do. And the person he really wants to talk to is Shmuel. Let me put it differently. The person he needs to talk to is Shmuel, maybe to give him some confidence, the confidence he needs to go to battle with the Philistines. But Shmuel already died. So what Shaul does, he goes to a Ba'alat Ov. She's not a fortune teller. It's a profession. She can communicate with the dead. Now, Le'alot Ba'ov, to communicate with the dead, it's illegal halachically, according to biblical law. But it's not only illegal halachically, it's illegal according to Shaul. Shaul made that profession illegal in his kingdom because he's kind of from. He wanted that biblical law to be a political reality in his kingdom. But at that moment when he felt the void, he felt that he doesn't have Shmuel around him, he dresses up as if he's not the king, and he goes to a woman in Ein Dor, and she communicates with the dead for him. And it's a beautiful, powerful story. I won't go into it. I just want to capture the need. When Shaul really needs someone, he needs to cling to someone. He clings to Shmuel when he was alive, and he clings to Shmuel after he dies. He tries to communicate with him when he is dead. By the way, she somehow like brings up his image, and Shmuel is angry. Leave me alone. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Oh, you're going to lose the war, by the way. He doesn't calm his anxiety. He only elevates it even more. What I try to establish here is that Shaul is emotionally dependent on Shmuel. Why is he emotionally dependent on Shmuel? Well, remember how Shaul has a very low sense of his own self-worth? The first person to ever believe in him is Shmuel. And when Shmuel believes in him, remember that divine lottery? So the divine lottery, Shmuel says in a very famous line, Shmuel says, after the divine lottery points out at Shaul, and Shaul is not there, and they bring him out from the storage room, and he's tall and goofy and embarrassed, and there's a gap between his biology and his, the whole thing. We said he's tall, but everybody so and he's embarrassed. So he points out to him, and he says to him, this is in chapter 10, "Vayomer Shmuel el kol ha'am," and Shmuel says to all the people, "Haraitem asher bachar bo Adonai." Ki en kamohu bechol ha'am. There is no one like him among the people. And what Shmuel is saying is echoing what the biblical narrator is saying about Shaul. Ve'ein ish mibnei Yisrael tov mimeno. There is no one that's tov, that's good, that as great as Shaul. So Shaul, that doesn't believe in himself, has Shmuel saying publicly to everyone, there is no one like him. When I said that Shaul, his self-worth depends on external validation, he doesn't only need public popularity. He needs one person to believe in him. And that one person is the first one to ever believe in him. He saw when Shaul thought that he has nothing inside, Shmuel saw everything. Shmuel saw his greatness. Shmuel believed in him. And Shaul admires Shmuel. So Shaul doesn't see much in himself, but he sees a lot in Shmuel. And if Shaul believes in Shmuel, and Shmuel believes in Shaul, so Shaul is like, well, if Shmuel sees something in me, maybe there's something in me. Maybe I could pull this off. Maybe I could be the king. And then, after the sin, after Amalek, after he clings to his coat, to his robe, and he tears his robe. So this is what it says. Vayomer elav Shmuel, the fact that you tore my robe is a metaphor. I'm going to tear Israel, the kingdom, away from you. And he says, Vayomer Shmuel elav, kara Adonai mamlechot Yisrael me'alecha. God is taking the kingdom away from you. Unetana lere'echa hatov mimcha. I just want to listen to that line, because with this, we'll end this session. God is taking your kingdom away from you. And he is going to give it to you, three words, Re'echa hatov mimcha. Someone else close to you that is better than you. Re'echa hatov mimcha. Remember what they said about Shmuel? En ish b'Yisrael. There's no one in Israel that's tov mimcha. No one's better than him. Shmuel says publicly, no one's better than him. And now he says, your kingdom is taken away from you. You know who will be handed over to? Someone that's better than you. What does that do to Shaul? When Shmuel declared that he's number one, no one's better than him, now he says to him, the kingdom will be handed over to someone that's better than him. Shmuel, that's in charge of handing over some sense of self-value to Shaul, has now crushed his self-value and send him in to a tremendous paranoia. Who is the Re'echa Tov Mimcha? Who is that person that's close to me and better than me? Because that person is going to take all my power away from me. That paranoia is going to change the life of Shaul, and that paranoia was planted in his mind by Shmuel, the same Shmuel that says he's number one, that told him he's number one, now it tells him someone else exists. That is number one. He's sending him, planting a paranoia in his mind, sending him to self-destruction in the next stage of his career. And the story of that self-destruction and the story of the Re'echa Hatov Mimcha, which we know who he is, it's David. That will be the story of our next session.